Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Berlin. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to what I was going to call an impromptu random fixture from the past. It's actually less impromptu, more overdue, really, because I had these notes from about a week and a half ago. Intending to do the show, and as you well appreciate, dear listeners, you sometimes just don't get round to it, do you? You cannot be asked. But I can be asked today. It's Easter Sunday, and I thought it would be nice not to leave the note-taking that I did last week to go to waste. The random year chosen by the dead hand of random.org was 1953, and when I compiled this little piece, it was actually March the 28th. So I do try, if I can, to put these random shows out on the day that the edition is released. Don't always work out that way. Didn't work out that way this time, but I'm going to do it anyway. 28th of March, 1953, therefore, is the random date from the past that we're going to be looking at. And we have a Millwall fixture from that day. It was a Division 3 South win. Millwall 1, Reading 0. This would be the 1952-53 season, which was actually quite a successful season, really. In modern terms, it would be classed as a fantastic season. But back then, the problem that we had as a third division club was that the league was structured so only the champion side would be promoted to the second division. Lions actually finished the 52-53 season under the managerial command of the great figure of Charlie Hewitt. Probably his most successful season, in truth. This is his second spell at the club after a period in the pre-war years. We'd actually finished second in the table with 62 points, just 2 points behind the championship side, Bristol Rovers. But that wasn't good enough. As I say, only the champions got promoted in these times, made it very difficult to get out of the third division. One of the reasons why we were stuck in that league for so long, in my opinion, especially in the 50s, difficult post-war years, austerity hit years after the rebuilding of the country, after the Second World War. But this was one of the better seasons for the Lions. So we finished second in the third division South. We'd sadly remain there for those reasons. But this win over Reading was played on March the 28th, 1953. It was played out in front of 14,611 at Coldblow Lane. A 1-0 win for the Lions. Scorer was Frank Neary, an old name from the past there. The Lions team in goal, Malcolm Finlayson, who was referred to the other day on one of our shows by Neil Andrews. It was one of his favourite Scottish players ever to take the field for Millwall. So Malcolm Finlayson in goal. He would go on to greater fortune away from the den at Wolves. He'd actually win the league a couple of times and the FA Cup at Wolves. Back two will be Jardine and Fisher, one of the Fisher brothers there. The midfield, as we would call it in modern terms, Short, Bowler and Reeves. And the forward line, Frank Neary, Smith, Alan Monkhouse, Pat Sayward and Hartburn. Now, I've actually picked out a couple of names from that season. The top scorer for the season didn't play in this particular game, and that man's name is John Shepherd. And he's an interesting character. Johnny Shepherd would play 22 fixtures this particular season, 52-53, and would score quite incredible 21 goals. That's pretty much goal a game from John Shepherd in this 52-53 season. So I've picked out John Shepherd. He didn't play against Reading. It looks like he was affected by injury a fair chunk of that season, with just 22 appearances out of the 46 that would, you know, that would comprise the programme. But I've also picked out another name from that era, second top scorer for that season. John Shepherd was our top scorer with 21 goals. Second top scorer for the season was one of the names I did mention, which was Alan Monkhouse. As I've said a few times on these shows, one of the pleasures that I try and take from the shows is to try to look at names of contributors to our club from the past that are less well known. One of the sad truths of life is that as these years move further and further away from the experience of modern fans, these names become, they fade. And I think that's a tremendous shame, because John Shepherd and his 21 goals and Alan Monkhouse with his 17 goals contributed to one of the best seasons, comparatively speaking, in Mill history. So I thought it'd be worth picking up on both names, if you'll indulge me that, dear listeners. But before we look at the careers of Shepherd and Monkhouse, I did find one press report. It's from the People for this particular game. Millwall 1, Reading 0, as reported by the Sunday People. The headline says, "Hey Millwall, this wouldn't please the boss." Then the copy says, "Millwall manager Charlie Hewitt wasn't there yesterday to see his team beat Reading. If he had have been, I know he would have gone away a disappointed man. Certainly, Mill got the all-important goal, but they produced a poor brand of football." I don't know if this is anything new to you, dear listeners. A win with a poor brand of football seems quite coincidental, doesn't it? The report continues, "Under pressure, the defence was shaky. Once in the first half and three times near the end, mistakes and silly mistakes at that nearly cost Mill the game. Twice, Jerry Bowler was badly at fault. In the 11th minute, his casual play let in Richie. Luckily for the Lions, Richie was just as careless as Bowler and shot straight at Finlayson in goal. Neary was the only bright spark amongst the forwards, and it was right that he scored. It was a grand goal too. He beat two men and cracked in a left-footed beauty past my old Arsenal colleague George Marks." And that was written by a journalist, probably an ex-player, Joe Hume Holm, dated 29th of March, 53, from The People. Sounds very familiar as a report, doesn't it? Dear listener, I think you could have probably photocopied that report and you know, reused that many, many times over the course of Mill history. So there we are, 1-0 win nevertheless. So first up, we're going to be looking at Johnny Shepherd, 1932 to 2018. He is actually seventh in the list of Millwall's all-time goal scorers, remarkably, because I still, as I've said already, still say he's probably one of the lesser-known names, John Shepherd. But there he is, seventh alongside some of the other greats that are well-known in club history, such as Morrison and Neil Harris and Sheringham, Posse and so on. But Shepherd would be with the Lions for seven seasons in total, 165 appearances in the 7 years between 1952-53 and 1957-58. 165 appearances, 78 goals scored in that 7 year period. That's a remarkable record. Now, obviously, that was mostly played, all played in Division 3 South. So you can talk about the level of play, but I think whatever your level, if you're getting goals at that kind of pace, then you're a remarkable player. He's an inside forward, born in Kensington in London in 1932, joined from the RAF National Service in the summer of 52 to Millwall, and would eventually move on to Brighton in June 1958. There's an interesting book that's on Amazon. His daughter, Julie Ryan, wrote a biography of her father, John Shepherd. It's called In and Out of the Lion's Den, Poverty, War and Football. Now, I've had a quick look on the Lion's Den. I've actually managed to take a bit of the back page blurb, and I'm going to read that because I think it sums up John Shepherd's career quite nicely. So this is the back page blurb from Julie Ryan's biography of her father. It says, "When 20-year-old John Shepherd scored four goals on his debut for Millwall in 1952, he not only equaled the national goal-scoring record for an away Football League debut, He also launched a successful football career that saw him go on to score prolifically for Millwall, Brighton and Hove Albion, and then Gillingham. But his career almost never happened. He spent much of 1951 in hospital, struck down by polio. The remarkable story of how John overcame this debilitating setback and how he progressed his career in the £14 a week days of 1950s professional football is told in and out of the Lion's Den with searching perception by his own daughter, Julie Ryan. The book also reveals a much deeper backstory to this footballer's life. For once, this aspiring young man had met and fallen in love with Esther Gonzalez of the 7th Feathers Youth Club in North Kensington. He was to marry into a family who had been refugees from the Spanish Civil War. The moving story of their survival from the Lion's Den, the Lion's Den of Franco's fascism, General Franco's fascism, altogether more savage and devastating than Millwall's footballing version, that's saying something, isn't it, is a poignant counterpoint to the trials and tribulations which John's own family had endured during the Depression of the 1930s and the dark days of the Blitz in the Second World War. The book is a wonderful evocation of football in the 1950s, the story of a Roy of the Rovers football hero who could not have been more different from the highly trained and paid professionals of today. But it's also a richly detailed portrayal of working class life at that time and the war-torn decades which led up to it both in England and in Spain. It's a must-read for all true football fans, especially those in London and the southeast of England. But it's also a tour de force for those interested in the wider social, economic and political forces which shaped that era, as an intimate account of the consequences and impact of those forces on this legendary lion and his family. So that's called In and Out of the Lion's Den. It is on Amazon. I've not read it, so I'm going purely by the blurb. It sounds a really interesting read. And as I say, it's an account of John Shepherd, Johnny Shepherd, 1932 to 2018. RIP, one of the great goal scorers for Millwall Football Club. And it's my privilege to be able to mention his name here today and hopefully give some measure of memorial to his achievements. Now, the second name that I wanted to mention to you, dear listeners, is Alan Monkhouse. He was second highest scorer in this particular season with 17 goals, but he's not a name that I'd come across previously to my shame, really. Now, there is a short paragraph on Wikipedia, which I'm going to read to you. Alan Thompson William Monkhouse, born in 1930, 23rd of October in Stockton-on-Tees in England. He died in 1992, aged 61. He was a forward and he played for the Lions. He started his career at a small club called Thornaby. He played for the Lions 69 appearances of 23 goals. Spread across the very late 1940s, 1949-50, through to 53-54, when he would move to Newcastle. There is a short report from the Sunderland Daily Echo, which says, Alan Monkhouse, Millwall's centre-forward or outside left, was today transferred to Newcastle. The transfer was completed in London at a meeting between the Millwall manager, Mr. Charles Hewitt, and the Newcastle director, Mr. Stanley Seymour. Monkhouse, a native of Stockton-on-Tees, was suspended recently by Millwall for failing to report for training after a visit to his home. That suspension has now been lifted. That's the report. So he's clearly crossed swords with Charles Hewitt. I think that was a very easy thing to do. Charles Hewitt is a huge figure, which I keep toying with the idea of doing a show or a feature on him. He's a domineering character from those times, a fascinating character, kind of that monster, but you know what I mean, one of these huge, huge personalities of the time. But Alan Monkhouse clearly had crossed his path. He was released in 1953 to go to Newcastle. He would not enjoy a huge amount of success with the Toon. Just 21 appearances over the 3 years that he was there, 21 appearances, 9 goals. He would finish his career with York City in the 56-57 season before going non-league with South Shields. A total Football League tally of 98 appearances for Millwall, Newcastle and York. 30 goals, that's not bad. It's 1 goal in 3. That's not a bad turnout. The Wikipedia piece describes him as a strong and powerful centre forward, but he could not displace the more famous names at Newcastle, such as Vic Keeble and Jackie Milburn, who was obviously part of the Charlton, Jackie and Bobby Charlton family. He was known as a penalty kick specialist, apparently, and quoted as one of the most consistent spot kickers of North East football. One small amusing anecdote I found on a Newcastle United fan site. This is from a chap called Ron Langston, who recalled a pre-match incident involving Alan Monkhouse. He says several of the opposition were wearing the fancy new low-slung continental boots, as against the old hobnails that he would have been brought up with. So Alan, seeing these continental boots, borrowed a pair of scissors off of the trainer and cut his co-op boots back down to size. It somehow didn't look quite the same. No, I dare say it didn't. There's a picture of Alan Monkhouse in. I will stick Alan on the show notes on the Twitter feed rather when it goes out. Wonderfully Brill creamed, flowing hair, and the usual kind of wearing Newcastle shirt, black and white shirt. But as so many players of that era, they looked old beyond their times. I guess such was the tough and hard times that they were born into. So Alan Monkhouse, 1930 to 1992, rest in peace. 69 appearances, forgive me, for the Lions, 23 goals from 1949-50 to 1953-54. So there we are, dear listeners. I hope that you've enjoyed this overdue random fixture. It's nice to be able to get this one out, actually. I've had it on my iPad, and I keep saying to myself, I must do this. And I'm glad that I have, because these are two names that deserve to be remembered. Johnny Shepherd and Alan Monkhouse.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you're enjoying Afton Mill Podcast, then why not help us grow the show and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts? We'd love it, if you visit the Apple link in the show notes and leave us a rating and a review. Afton Mill is the number one podcast broadcasting from beautiful South Bermondsey. No show sponsors, no Patreon, and no TikTok accounts. Thank you, dear listeners, and as always, arrivederci Mill.
Happy Easter to you, dear listeners. Welcome one and all to another random fixture edition of Achtung Millwall. My name is Nick Hart. You are, of course, listening to the number one Millwall podcast, Achtung Millwall, namely. And as it's Easter, I thought it might be nice to do a random fixture based in and around the Easter period of the past. And the great god, random.org, has turned up the year 1899. So we're going to take you back to Victorian times, dear listeners, to a little Easter programme of matches in actual fact. Millwall, the Dockers, at this time, playing at East Ferry Road on the Isle of Dogs, now occupied by the Big Asda that's by the side of Cross Harbour Station. You've got absolutely no trace whatsoever of what was quite a substantial stadium.
It had famously a running track and cycling track around the outside of the football pitch in the middle. Apparently, it held upwards of 15 to 20,000, so it was quite a substantial arena. The Lions had moved there following the departure from the back of the Lord Nelson earlier on in the 1890s. But the Lions occupied the Lions. The Dockers, keep calling them the Lions, they would not become the Lions until after the Boer War, when the term Lions became more popularised, as many other things African at that stage. But the Dockers at this point were playing at the East Ferry Road ground. And we have a series of three games, actually, for you, which I found in the British newspaper archive for this particular Easter weekend of 1899. And each fixture would take in actually some of the four corners of the United Kingdom, so to speak. So first up, we have they're all friendly matches. They seem to have arranged a holiday programme, not featuring any league. At this point, Millwall Athletic would have been a Southern League side, a very powerful Southern League side. And the Southern League at this point in history was at least a match for the Football League, which is more northern-based, the Southern League by its very name being based down south. But it was certainly, in terms of football power and, you know, status, at least a match for the Football League. And you will get a sense of that by the nature of some of the fixtures that were arranged for the 1899 Easter weekend. Anyway, first up, we have a friendly game between Millwall Athletic and the Scottish Amateurs. Now, this would be a representative side for Scottish amateur football. The Scottish Amateur Football Association would not be formed until 1909. So I'm guessing this would be put together probably by clubs of the ilk of Queen's Park, who are very powerful in Scottish football. Even at this point, their heyday came in the very early years of the FA Cup, when they were famously semi-finalists. But they were a very influential side, Queen's Park playing at Hampden Park. And most famously of all, of course, amateur, and they remain amateur to this day. But this is a representative side of some sort. We don't have much to go with, I'm afraid, dear listeners. Just a paragraph from the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, which reports Millwall Athletic versus the Scottish Amateurs at Millwall yesterday before 8,000 spectators. The visitors won the toss. It looks like the only thing they did win in this particular game. Banks and Barber were making their initial bow for the Athletic, for the Dockers, Millwall. In the opening half, Banks from Tanner Hill's pass scored for the home side, and Barber scored from a penalty, notching the second. Half-time, Millwall 2, Scottish Amateurs 0. And then a wonderful sentence, nothing was scored in the second half, the final score being Millwall 2, Scottish Amateurs 0. So nothing happened, basically, in the second half. Now, Banks will be familiar to anyone that listened to the summertime shows that I did with Neil Fissler last year now. That was Herbert Banks, 1874 to 1947, famous as our first ever English international. And he actually featured on the calendar, if anyone bought one of the calendars that we put out at the start of the season. He was one of the faces that we managed to put on that calendar. Name really in Mill history, as I say, in that he was our first English cap. A short man with a tendency to put on weight was his reputation, and he was suspended in 1899 by Millwall for precisely being that, for overweight. Strangely, he was also known for boundless energy, so it's not always about your physique, dear listeners. It's about what's, you know, it's the fight. It's not the dog in the fight, it's the fight in the dog, as they say. So Banks, Herbert, seemed to have plenty of fight in his particular dog. He also served in the First World War, 1914, at the age of 40. Interesting. I mean, many men, even at that age, comparatively late in life at that point, keep in mind that the life expectancy for the average working class man then would have been barely 60, maybe 65. Hence the old age pension being 65, of course, because they didn't want to pay it to you. But he did serve in the First World War, and after leaving football, he worked as a warehouseman. Bert Banks, capped against Ireland. 1901. Now, Bert Banks would score in the second of the holiday fixtures that I've picked out here for you. This was another representative side. The Millwall Athletic played the Leinster FA of Ireland, the Leinster Football Association, a representative side, as the name implies, for the Football Association representing Leinster, one of the four great regions of Ireland, which is on the east coast of the island of Ireland, and kind of surrounding to the north of Dublin, if my Irish geography is correct. Please do correct me if I'm incorrect on that, any Irish listeners. This friendly was played on April the 3rd, 1899, Millwall 2, Leinster FA 2, played in front of just 2,500 spectators at East Ferry Road. A very short report, again from the Sheffield Telegraph. At the East Ferry Road enclosure, Millwall yesterday, at the time of the kickoff, fully 2,500 spectators were present. After an attack by the Irishmen, the home team settled down and McCullough made a neat save in the Irish goalkeeper. On renewing the attack, Herbert Banks netted the ball, so a score there. Mill's success was only short-lived as Hare equalised, and at half-time the scores read one each. Nothing on the second half in this particular report. The result was Mill 2, Leinster 2, so a draw against the Leinster FA. Now, I've had a quick look on Wikipedia on the Leinster Football Association, because it's an interesting opponent. Obviously one of the major provinces of the island of Ireland. Formed in 1892, it's actually one of the oldest football associations in Europe. Only the national football associations of Denmark and Netherlands, in European terms, are older, apart from obviously the four home associations. It was originally affiliated to the Belfast-based Irish FA, but following partition of Ireland in 1921, it seceded from the IFA and became part of the Football Association of Ireland in what will become the Republic in due course. And having dipped my toe into Irish political matters previously, I'm going to leave it there, because I think I can only dig myself a hole with someone or other if I continue with the subject. But Leinster FA, representing that region of Ireland, and is one of the oldest FAs, still exists, founded in 1892, and it still exists to this day nowadays as part of the FAI, the Football Association of Ireland. So the third and final fixture, probably the main fixture in all honesty, that I've chosen from the holiday period of April 1899, is a friendly fixture between Millwall Athletic and Glasgow Rangers, which was played. It was reported in the Referee newspaper on the 2nd of April, so I'm going to guess it was played the day before, I would imagine, given that we played on the 31st of March against the Scottish Amateurs. I'm guessing this was an April the 1st fixture, but I can't tell you that for certain, dear listeners. But this is a report from the Referee, a newspaper, football newspaper primarily. Continuing their holiday fixtures, Saturday, received a visit from the Glasgow Rangers. It was not the Scottish club's league team. The match between the Scottish and English leagues claiming several of their best players. And Mill did not play Banks and Barber, who had so materially assisted the club to beat the Scottish Amateurs on Good Friday. So it's kind of a second string 11 on both sides to a degree, but a very substantial, prestigious fixture. Glasgow Rangers at this point were already Scottish champions a couple of times over, Scottish Cup winners, a major, major club in not just in Scottish terms, but in British terms. And Millwall, were able to command that level of opponent. So it gives you a real sense of the stature of Millwall Athletic at this point. It's quite strange given the tumble down the divisions that would happen after two of the major World War conflicts that would happen in the 20th century. But at this point, the Lions of the South were major names and major opponents worthy of Glasgow Rangers sending a team down to conduct a friendly. Game appears to have been a good game, fast-paced, the ground in excellent order, says the referee. Both sides put in some good work. Goal scorers, the result of is one that will hopefully raise a few smiles to this day. It's Millwall Athletic 5, Glasgow Rangers 1, in front of 7,000 spectators at East Ferry Road. Apparently heavy rain towards the end of the game rather took away some of the pizzazz from the game. It started out quite as a fast-paced game, but as the second half wore on, the rain came down hard. And as I say, took away some of the spin. But what a result. Millwall Athletic 5, Glasgow Rangers 1, half-time 2-0. Goal scorers, John Calvey. I will touch on John Calvey. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then we don't have timings for the third and fourth goals from Hill scored again by Hill and Calvi, and then 5 minutes from time, Calvi scored the fifth Millwall goal and a last minute consolation for the Rangers. A chap called Allan, A-L-L-A-N, scored in the 89th minute. Rather a casual start to the day. The start was fixed for 3:30, says the referee, but 10 minutes were wasted and the game got started at 3:40 in the end. And half-time, it refers to Mill having a long rest. I don't know how long this rest was for. And then a very precise restart time of 4:37 for the second half. So there it is, bit of a cash start to what was quite a prestigious fixture. John Calvi, scorer of two goals there, again is another man featured on our calendar. Jack Calvi, also known as a great goal scorer for the Lions, for the Dockers, signed age 19, and famously expressed doubts that he was good enough to play for a team of the standing of Millwall Athletic. He scored a hat-trick in his debut in an 8-1 Southern League win over Ilford in 1896. In his second spell, he came back for two. He went left to go to Forest in 1901, when many of the players did indeed, find other clubs because Mill was in financial trouble at this point. But when he came back for a second spell, he was rather overweight, sadly, and playing on past reputation, as one that newspaper put it. But a big name in early Millwall history, John stroke Jack Calvi. And finally, just to close what had been a fairly busy week of football for the Dockers, we see in the Morning Post, dated Thursday, April the 6th, 1899, the holiday week is closing. But we see that Millwall Athletic took on a club by the name of Thornaby Utopians yesterday, so it's been a Wednesday, before a small company. Not many people turned up for this one. But Mill Athletic closed out the game 3-0 over the Thornaby Utopians. Not so good at, not such an idyllic result for the Utopians there. Elsewhere on the page, we see that Lord Hawke's cricket team have just departed Cape Town in South Africa, having defeated the Colonials, as they're put here, who failed utterly in their second innings against Lord Hawke's team. The Colonials were disposed of for a total of 35 runs. And the day after Cape Town, the team have taken to the Union Company steamer Norman, which has left for England, forthwith having dealt with the Colonials. And finally, there's a story for you, dear listener. A death of a drafts champion. James Wiley, the celebrated Herd Laddie, and ex-champion drafts player of the world, died in Glasgow yesterday, at the age of 80 years, the champion drafts player of the world. Who knew there was such a thing? And certainly, at the age of 80, to be claiming that title, what a player he must have been. James Wiley, the celebrated drafts champion, passed away yesterday, which will be April the 5th, 1899. So there we have it, dear listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this little rewind back to the year 1899. We've strayed slightly far from the Mill path there, but that is the way that this show works, isn't it? Hope you enjoy these shows. We will be back very, very soon for further considerations of the olden days of Millwall Football Club. Until then, arrivederci Millwall, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.